Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring professional poker player Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner!
Wow, winning.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
Brian Rast, the man who won the $50,000 buy-in Poker Players Championship at the World Series of Poker this summer. Brian was scheduled to be with us a couple weeks ago, couldn't do it, and so he will be on with us today. Also, Matt Affleck returns, not as a guest, but as our poker coach today from StackemCoaching.com. He's going to talk about handling downswings, which every poker player has had to do at some point in their life. Also, Chad Holloway from Poker News, who has blogged about a hand he saw on Poker After Dark between Mike the Mouth Matisau and Phil Hellmuth, and Chad did not like the way the two pros handled it on TV. So we're going to talk about that. And also on today's show, we're going to give away a seat in Vanessa Russo's Big Slick Boot Camp at the Beau Rivage in Biloxi this Friday. We'll do that for our Twitter followers on our live audio a little bit later on in this hour. Hello, I am Paul Harrah's, sitting at the feature table in the poker room of Harrah's St. Louis, while my partner Dennis Phillips is in Las Vegas again. Hi, Dennis, how are you?
I'm enjoying the cool weather out here. It only got to 108 yesterday.
Holy cow. Summer in Las Vegas.
There you go. Yeah, we don't have to buy too many snow shovels out here, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, let's jump right into some news here. Yeah. One of the big pieces of news locally here is that Harrah's St. Louis just had his first $10,000 shootout, a double shootout event here on Saturday that ran the same way they did the WSOP qualifiers earlier in the year. And I'm happy to say that I won my first table, got heads up against one of the two players at the table I did not want to be heads up against. Anybody who's ever played any kind of sit and goes, you could sit down and identify a couple of people at the table you'd rather not have to get heads up with. I did. I got heads up with one, and I ended up beating her. Then I went to the final table, and of course I was the first one out. So no 10K for me, but the good news is that it was so successful. In fact, here's how successful it was. Even though they could only take $50 in the noon flight and $50 at the 3 o'clock flight, people were signing up and trying to become alternates, which you cannot do in a shootout. You can't have somebody knocked out from the table and then say, here's a new player, because the idea is take everybody out at your table to win your table. So Denise, who's the poker room manager here, has already announced that they will have another one of these double shootouts on the last Saturday of next month, September. And we'll have details for you on that. I believe that's the 24th of September, and I'll be plugging that a lot here. So that's a pretty successful format here, and looking forward to playing that again and maybe getting to the final table again. Now, there's news about Full Tilt Poker that came out over the weekend, Dennis, when Jeff Ifra, who's one of their attorneys, went on to 2+2 and said, we're still working on getting every U.S. and European and other global player paid, but we have not got a deal with the one investor we were talking to, and we still have to get outside investors to put money in here, because without that, we don't have the money to repay the players. This can't be going down well in the poker community.
It's not even, it's not good news. I will say that I was pleased that he went on air. They were supposed to make an announcement. They had nothing to announce because there had been no progress. Rather than doing what they've done the past few months, which was nothing, he did go online. He did try to answer questions. He was quite limited in what he could answer. But at least that, it's a small one, but it's a step forward. He's trying to communicate. He's trying to stay on top of it. And he did announce that there's going to be several announcements forthcoming in the next few weeks, and that they are working toward getting it resolved. And he did make one flat statement in that no deal will be negotiated that will not involve paying back all the players.
Right.
So that's not much to take out of it, but he did communicate. He did come on and answer and try to answer questions he could, and he did make that statement. So that's a small step.
So the question, and then again, becomes one that we asked several months ago in the wake of Black Friday, which is, what is it that they're trying to sell? You know, part of the sale to any kind of new investor would be, hey, we've got this huge debt, which may be $150, $200 million or maybe more to the players whose money was stuck in their accounts and which we can't give back. And beyond that, are they saying, look, it's the Tiltware software that Chris Ferguson helped write and the hope that someday you'll be able to get this back into the U.S. market? Is that what they're trying to get somebody to invest in?
I think there's about three things there to invest in. With a large number of people trying to get into the online business and not having platforms, they have a proven one, one that has withstood all of the problems that potentially come with it. So their software, their programming that Chris helped design is worth quite a bit. That's a start. Number two is their database. They have a tremendous amount of players that were on there, the database, the communication with them. People, you know, it's a successful site. People like to play there. So that's the second one. The third one is a plus and a minus. It's the name recognition. It's the Full Tilt branding. There is a branding out there. People do recognize it. People, recognize the symbols and can tell a Full Tilt logo from a long ways away without actually reading it. So there is some benefit still yet from that, I think. The other thing that he also said in that was that whenever there is new investment coming in there, there will be an entire new management also, and that the old management will step away from it and be gone, wipe the slate clean, as they say. So anybody that comes in there, they buy a database, they buy an established program, and they do get the name. Now, I won't argue whether that's a plus or a minus. I still think it's a bit of a plus, but there are definitely some negative connotations now with the branding.
Yeah, I think a lot of those players in that database look at this as a tainted brand now. It's been 4.5 months since Black Friday, and when you hold on to people's money for that long, particularly for people who had a lot of money on there, I don't think that they're going to go running back to your brand later on, but all that remains to be seen. And in the meantime, Full Tilt continues to look for whoever that investor will be. Speaking of poker websites, did you hear that Jamie Gold has launched a free online poker site called freegoldpoker.com?
Isn't it amazing? Gaming is exploding. Almost daily I get comments or articles forwarded or emails or something about another state that's trying to get into it, or one that's enlarging or adding more casinos, or a casino is spending millions of dollars renovating it and changing and this and that. And the online thing is no different. We've got a ton of different people that are setting up their own line, their own play for free or subscription sites or whatever it happens to be. I wish Jamie all the power in the world, but it's getting to be a crowded marketplace, and you're going to have to come up with something a little better mousetrap, I think, to start catching people. So I think it'd be interesting to see who survives out of all of this recent rush into online poker and into the gaming aspect of it. But I was a little surprised that Jamie came in. I think they're guaranteeing $100,000 a month.
Yeah, his agent, Randy Casper, says that they're working on endorsement deals and charity partnerships and $100,000 a month in prize pools. Where's that money coming from?
Good point.
I mean, this is the question. We have to ask this question. We asked it of Jeffrey Pollock and Annie Duke,
yep,
about the Epic Poker League. We've got to ask it about all the rest of these sites. You know, you look at the free poker sites that are doing well now, like Zynga on the Facebook platform. They can at least start getting a huge Facebook database and turn that into potentially something that creates money, like they've done with Farmville and some of their other online ventures. But unless you've got deep pockets from somebody who is willing to pour a lot of money in the hopes that in a couple of years you'll be able to turn it into a real money poker site, I'm not sure exactly what the business plan is, at least in the short term.
I agree with you completely, and you made a very valid point. Zynga there with Farmville already has money in the bank, already
yep,
has a successful product. They're expanding it. They're not starting out from scratch. Big difference.
Yep. All right. One of the companies that we weren't sure if they would still be around after Black Friday We talked a lot about what TV shows would still be there. Will high-stakes poker be back? Well, I asked Maury Escandani by email, and he said we haven't gotten the word one way or the other from GSN about whether we're going to do a new season. He doesn't know whether there's going to be any more Poker After Dark. We know that Poker Stars has stopped production on The Big Game, which didn't even air this summer in the United States except for online. But the one that is coming back and is still very successful is the World Poker Tour, which turned away all of its online sponsors except for their own club, WPT, as their primary sponsor. And they are still on Sunday nights on Fox Sports Net. And their ratings this past season, as we've told you, were up about 37% over the previous year because of some of the changes. Kimberly Lansing as the hostess, Tony Dunst with his Raw Deal segment, Mike and Vince still there, and a lot of different editing of the shows, so it's not just, hey, he's all in. Oh, it's Queens versus Ace King, which was what you saw a lot in the previous seasons of the WPT. Well, right now they are in the first tournament of Season 10. It's the Legends of Poker out at the Bike, and Tony Dunst is going to be adding to his Raw Deal duties. You may remember when Dennis and I talked to him at the Rio this summer, he said he was going to be doing more on the telecast, and he is. Starting today, they're doing a live streaming feed of the final table, the final six players who are there. We saw this first at the EPT, then the WSOP did it very successfully this summer, and now the WPT is doing it. But some pros, Dennis, are raising the questions that you've raised about it. And let me just quote from a couple of Twitter feeds from a couple of big-name pros. Eric Seidel says, this new idea of showing whole cards on a one-hour delay is an awful trend. First the WSOP, now the WPT. It's like sanctioned cheating. And Kathy Liebert says, I don't want to play WPT if it's live on the Internet with a one-hour delay. I agree that it's not fair to some players who don't have access to the info. I think poker shows need to show whole cards. It's just not fair to show during the tournament when some get additional information and others don't. But, Dennis, it seems like the tide has turned here.
Well, I don't know. I like the way they did it in the EPT down there in the Atlantis, down in the Bahamas, where they sequestered the people, where you couldn't get any information to them, where then nobody could benefit from knowing what how a person had played a half an hour or an hour earlier. It's something that's going to be very difficult to get accepted by the pros, by the people that do their job. One of the reasons why Eric Seidel is so successful is he is such a good poker player. He reads the table, he reads the people, he's very difficult to read himself. You give people the advantage of being able to see his hold cards and such, you know, does that take away a little of his edge? Well, in his mind it does, and it frankly probably does. So I understand why he's upset with it. I'm not comfortable people seeing my cards an hour later and being able to sit at the same table. Can you imagine in a cash game if that would happen?
Hmm.
Oh, my gosh. You know. So this is a long ways from being resolved. Now, I don't know what they're doing in the WPT. Are they only showing it when it goes to the river? Are they only showing them when it actually makes a difference?
I don't know. We'll have to see what the live stream looks like that Tony is hosting today.
Yeah, this will be. I'll be very curious. I actually wasn't going to watch that. I may now, just to see exactly. I like Tony. I like the way he's done it. I think he's brought a lot to the set and a lot to the WPT, and I'm glad they've enlarged his role. And I think he'll handle it very well. But by the same token, showing hold cards, just it's a scary proposition. And I'm just afraid that somehow or other, somebody's going to find a major way to take advantage of it.
Well, I'll tell you one other thing about the WPT. They have lowered the buy-in. You may remember that for years and years years, it was a $10,000 buy-in to get into these events. And, you know, they were getting down to 100, 120, 140 entrants in these. And, of course, they were the big-name pros who could afford to pay $10K and go out on the circuit. You know, Kathy Liebert did that over 100 times. That's $1 million in buy-ins over the course of less than a decade. The last year they lowered it to 5,000. This one at the Bike was 3,700 to buy in, and look at that, the number of entries went way up. And also Matt Savage, who's the tournament director, who's also returning for season 10, did it as their first ever re-entry event. You could play 1A, and if you bust it out, come back in with a full buy-in and a full stack to play day 1B. They ended up with 757 entries. You predicted this months ago, Dennis. This is the trend.
It absolutely is. If you follow it worldwide, this is happening. Re-entries are going to be much more popular, and the buy-ins are plummeting, and I think they should. I think they were a little too high, a little too elite, a little too restrictive on the field. Now the player can come in and find a satellite that he can actually afford to qualify for these big events. You realize some of these other satellites, it was $1,000 to qualify or to play a satellite to get a seat to be able to play it.
Right.
That's, you know, a huge amount for a lot of people's bankrolls. So I think the satellites are going to be increasing. I think you're going to see a lot of the younger people with a more restrictive bankroll being able to take a chance at it. I just think it's good for poker. It's going to enlarge the field quite a bit.
Well, I think one impact it's going to have is on the TV broadcasts, where when it was a 10K buy-in, you were much more likely to get a well-known name poker pro on TV, because for many cases they were the ones who could afford the 10K buy-in. Now that they've lowered it to 3,700, they've got their six for the final table today. Four of them have never played in a WPT before, and five of them have never played in a WPT before, and for four of them it's their first cash. That's a completely different makeup of a final table. And I wonder if that's going to affect the ratings, because there won't be anybody there who you recognize. Look, it's Mike the Mouth. Look, it's, Eric Seidel. Look, it's Alan Cunningham. Look, it's Andy Frankenberger, who was last year's Player of the Year. You won't have that. It'll be, who's this guy?
Well, you're probably right. I did not realize those stats. Five of them, wow, four of them, their first cash.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of the extreme, that's for sure. And part of the problem you get is if these people are not used to cameras, they're not used to being in front of it, there's no name recognition, there are no followers. Yeah, that could be a huge detriment on their ratings. Tony's going to have some fun, isn't he?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what they do with this. And, of course, Mike and Vince will be the announcers still.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The production crew at the WPT, I think, did an even better job last year than they have through the years. And you got to give them credit. How many TV shows last 9 years and into a 10th season? In primetime TV, that's a smash hit television show going into its 10th year.
Oh, absolutely. What is it to qualify? You have to have 100 episodes to go for reruns or something like that, which is only like 5 years.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. That would be a monster. 10 years, you know, it doesn't equal a Gunsmoke or, 60 Minutes, but it's getting up there.
Yep. So congratulations to everybody at the WPT, which is expanding with an event this year in Jacksonville, Florida, and the Parks Casino in Philadelphia, and some other international locations as well, and will continue to air on Sunday nights. Now, while we're talking about TV poker, let's bring in Chad Holloway from Poker News to join us and talk about this Poker After Dark hand. Chad, welcome back to the final table.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
So you blogged about this hand that you saw on the $100,000 cash game on Poker After Dark, and it involved Phil Hellmuth and Mike Matisau. Set it up and then tell us what you didn't like about it.
All right. I had been watching, this in particular Poker After Dark was 2 weeks long. This happened about halfway through the second week. So I had invested a week and a half of my time watching these players. And finally, this huge hand developed. It started when Peter Jetton opened for about $1,400. He ended up having big slick. He got Phil Hellmuth to call behind on the button. He also had big slick. And then action was on Mike Matisau in the small blind. And he 3-bet to 5,300 with pocket jacks. So it looked like, you know, there's some big hands. We knew there's going to be some action. And sure enough, Peter Jetton came along for the ride, and Hellmuth decided to pop it up to 18,000. Matisau 5-bet for 53,000. Jetton folded. Hellmuth moved all in for 88,000. And Matisau called. So all of a sudden, there's this $183,000 pot. You know, the viewers have been waiting a week and a half. Everybody's excited. And Matisau says, you know, this is a big pot. What do you want to do here? You want to run it twice? It's a big pot. And, you know, Hellmuth is off ranting. He's complaining like he usually does, you know, that the money got in on these hands. And eventually they decide to pull everything back except for about $20,000 and play it that way instead of running it twice. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I mean, this was before there was a flop or anything. They just decided, you know, let's just leave 20K in there and we'll play for the rest. And, you know, this was just ludicrous to me. I couldn't believe that it was happening. Not only that the players decided to do this, but especially that the TV producers were allowing it to happen.
Well, what about Jensen? Get it. Wait, there were three people in there. He had $5,000 in this spot.
Yeah, and they asked, you know, they asked Peter Jetton if he mind, if he really cared if they took it back, and he kind of said, you know, I don't really care. He kind of just stayed out of it, took a step back, and I think that's why it was around $20,000 that they left in there, because they left the $5,300 that Jetton had put in, and then they each put in about $5,300. Then you add some blinds and annies, and it got right around that 20K mark. But even still, it just was ridiculous to me. I wouldn't go so far as to say it was collusion, because it certainly wasn't their intention. But, you know, they pushed Jetton out of the pot, and then we're just like, well, let's just chop it up.
That's basically what they did.
What's odd about this hand to me is they're on the Poker After Dark cash game where the buy-in is $100,000, which means you sit down at the table willing to risk $100,000. And by the way, one of the players involved here is among the richest poker players in America, Phil Hellmuth. We've seen him knit it up on TV before and try to buy insurance from Phil Ivey or other people at the table. But come on, this is why you went on that show, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I mean, if they weren't willing to risk and play these big pots, they should not even be playing in the game. And the producer should recognize that as well and, you know, have a rule in effect that they can't do something like this. You know, if they want to reduce variance, run it twice, run it three times, that's fine. At least the viewers get some entertainment as far as seeing the cards and seeing who wins or loses. It was just ridiculous. And, you know, they actually did play for the 20K. And the board ran out. There was a jack right on the flop, and you know, Matisau would have won the hand.
Yeah, but that's irrelevant. The fact that prior to the flop, number one, you're absolutely right. I can't believe producers would allow it because it ruins the game. But if I'm sitting in a cash game and I was involved and I had $5,300 sitting in the pot, and as soon as I get pushed out of it, they decide to reduce the pot, I'm not going to be a happy camper. It's just not right.
Yep.
And you're right. They may not have, don't get me wrong, I'm not accusing of this. That is, to me, is almost an unintentional collusion. We've talked about this before on the show, times where you don't really intentionally collude, but if you sit down at a table where you know three people and you know they're darn good and you have other people at the table that you don't know, who are the ones you're going to more likely pick on to start with? You know, that type of stuff. Collusion happens just, you know, whether you aim to or not. Wow. I would have raised the stink, I think. I would not have been happy.
You mean if you were Jetton?
If I was Jetton, I would not have been happy. I'd want my $5,300 back. You guys pulling money out of the pot? Give me my money back. Then you go ahead and do whatever the hell you want. Well, I'm serious.
I'm laughing because, you know, you could probably make that offer. It's not going to happen in a lot of places and in a lot of casinos. They're not going to allow you to do that. But apparently these guys can make their own rules. And things like this do happen sometimes in high-stakes games. But there are two elements here. One is, again, you went on TV on a high-stakes cash game setting to show off that you're a big shot high stakes cash game player. That's part of what your image is supposed to be on that show. And now you're showing, ooh, I'm afraid?
Wow.
Now, Chad, did you happen to run the numbers here? Because we know that it's, essentially a race with the jacks against Helmuth's ace king.
No, it's not. Because there's another ace king dead now.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. So here's the question for both of you. At that point, If Matisau thinks about it, what does he think that Jetton folded? And if he includes that, I mean, run through the thinking there for me, Chad.
Yeah, it actually had like their little director's cut later in the week that I look forward to watching because I figured they'd address this hand. And Jetton, you know, they asked his take on the whole thing, and he said, you know, I didn't really care so much that they chopped it there, but he did say that he thought Matisau was insane for doing so. You know, he said, you have to figure for me for folding either an ace or a king, if not both. So, you know, it's not essentially a coin flip. It's got to be like a 65-35. And that seemed to be the general consensus, you know, towards Mattisau and his decision was, you know, why would you chop it there? It really wasn't a coin flip.
I agree totally on that. If I'm Mattisau and he folds, I mean, it's possible he called with tens there. You know, maybe. But more than likely he had either an ace or a king or, as in this case, both. So, yeah, wow.
Yeah, I mean, I got to put him on ace king or ace queen that he's going to lay that down there. He's probably
so.
Not laying down queens. He wouldn't play it that way if he had queens. So, yeah, I agree with you, Chad. It's a great point, and I'm glad you came on to talk about it. Thanks very much.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. It was an interesting hand, and I'm glad we got the chance to talk about it.
Yeah, right, Chad Holloway. Chad Holloway, who blogged about that, by the way, online at unabomberpoker.com. We have to take a quick break here, and then Matt Affleck will join us for our poker coaching segment. And, you know what? Let's do the giveaway of the Big Slick Boot Camp right now. This is going to go on this Friday, September 2nd, at the Beau Rivage in Biloxi. Our friend Vanessa Russo has been doing these Big Slick Boot Camps all around the country. We've given away seats before. We gave away one during the main event of the World Series of Poker. We gave away one in Tunica, which, by the way, Dennis, I don't know if you know this, the guy who won the seat in Tunica was listening live to our stream in the New York area and flew down to Tunica to go to the boot camp and then emailed me later and said it was great and he learned a ton. So, yeah. So for those of you who are listening to our show live, the podcast listeners, it'll be too late by the time you get this. But if you're listening to our show live on 590 The Fan KFNS or KFNS.com, go on Twitter and tweet the words Big Slick to Dennis_Phillips. That's Dennis's Twitter account, Dennis_Phillips. Just tweet the words Big Slick, and the first one to do that will get a seat in Vanessa's Big Slick Boot Camp at the Beau Rivage in Biloxi. Again, if you can't go, you don't want to make the trip down there, you know, don't do this. But if you're interested and you're going to be in the area or you want to fly down or drive down to do this, it's terrific. And by the way, the Beau, what a beautiful place that is. If you've never played poker down there, they run great tournaments. So again, Big Slick to Dennis_Phillips on Twitter right now. We'll come back with the winner and Matt Affleck and Brian Rast, all in the second half of the Final Table Poker Radio Show from 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com and our podcasts on thechipleader.com.
Kids, are you caught up in that old game of shuffling your debt around and hoping you'll get lucky and win the jackpot? Well, it's time to deal. Mortgage rates are low and savings are high. So stop bluffing and call 800-GRANNY-8 or go to granny8.com. You bet our friendly loan officers make it easy, and we don't have an application fee. So call 800-GRANNY-8 and you'll be holding all the aces.
Great mortgage rates, call 800-GRANNY-8.
granny8.com.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show, brought to you by Harrah's St. Louis, where you can play the slots Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and get yourself a free buffet. Or if you're a poker player, go to harrahs.com/STL poker for the schedule of the 13 tournaments they do every week, with buy-ins from $60 up to a $200 buy-in for the 10K double shootout that will take place again on the last Saturday of September. Again, the website, harrahs.com/STL poker. And if you're a cash game player, come on down here and play in the No Limit games. They've also got Limit Poker, and we play PLO here every day. The Tuesday game starts at this very table in the Harrah's Poker Room. As soon as we finish the show, we convert it into a cash game table and play some PLO, and you're invited to be a part of that as well. For details, you can call the Poker Room hotline at 314-770-7600. Congratulations to our listener and Twitter follower, Nate Harding, who was the first one to tweet us the words Big Slick and got himself a seat in Vanessa Russo's Big Slick Boot Camp at the Beau Rivage this Friday. For more information on Vanessa's camps, you can go to BigSlickBootCamp.com. And now let's rethink poker with the folks from StackemCoaching.com, sponsors of our weekly poker coaching segment. Today we're happy to welcome Mick Matto back to the show. Matt Affleck, who was a full-time guest earlier in the show, but today is back for a quick little poker coaching segment. Hi, Matt. How are you?
How's it going? Not bad.
It's going great. Before we actually get to the coaching segment, I want to ask you about something we were talking about before, because I know you played in the Legends of Poker at the Bike this weekend, and today they're streaming the final table online. That was something that the WSOP did this summer and the EPT has done earlier. As a poker pro, what are your thoughts on streaming final tables with hole cards?
I think it's great right now. It seems to be the ongoing trend right now. EPT kind of started it. Now the World Series is doing it. Now the World Poker Tour. So seems like all the tours are moving towards the live streaming final tables, and it obviously only goes to a certain market. It doesn't go to, not your average person might not be watching, but a lot of the poker players that are out there love watching the final tables, and for that specific audience, it's a really good idea, and they all love it. So,
you're not worried about it giving away too much information?
Not really. I think a lot of that hype and is overrated a little bit. I think they are going to have it on a delay, which helps. But, I mean, people are going to see the cards and stuff, and I think the integrity of the game is pretty high where people aren't going to take that chances too seriously, I think.
All right. What do you have for us in our Stack'em coaching segment today?
Today we're going to be talking about downswings, and I feel that one of the most important things and maybe one of the most underlooked things in a professional poker player's career is learning that downswings are unavoidable during the career, and one of the most important things is learning to deal with the downswing. I feel that there's obviously a couple of causes of downswings. One, it can be a bad run of cards, which we all know it can happen every once in a while. But also another overlooked aspect of downswings that I believe in is losing confidence in your plays. And maybe you've been running bad for a week or two, hitting some bad cards. And the biggest thing, I believe, is not letting it ruin the confidence in your game. Therefore, I think when you're in a downswing, to make sure that you're not losing confidence in plays and it's just a bad run of cards, I feel that many people have too big of an ego and are afraid to move down in stakes. Recently, I was in a big downswing, and my average game right now is 5-10 no limit, and I dropped down to 2-5 no limit. And the reason I did that was to help regain confidence for when I moved back up to my normal stakes. And I feel that when you move down in limits, you're going to be playing theoretically against a worse player pool, and therefore you're going to be able to run over the table more. You're going to have confidence in your plays. You're going to know you're the best player at the table. And all this helps lead to regaining confidence back in your game while you're in a downswing. When you move down, I feel it's a big goal that you should set a goal. So when I moved down to 2-5 no limit, I didn't move back up to the 5-10 games until I had made $5,000 in 2-5. And the reason that was is I wanted to prove myself, hey, I can beat this game, I can crush this game, and it happened pretty quickly. When I moved back up to 5-10, the first week back up there, I was up there crushing the games. And the big deal with it was I was very confident in my plays. And I feel that dropping down in the stakes and gaining confidence back for playing against a weaker player pool really helped me when I moved back up to the 5-10 games. And so my recommendation for a lot of people out there is that you need to get rid of the ego in poker and not be afraid to drop down to a lesser stake when you're running bad for a couple of weeks. And regaining the confidence will help your game a lot.
Sounds excellent. I think it's very good advice. Quick thing for a follow-up for that. If you're playing a lot of cash, is it maybe a good idea to get your confidence back, go play a couple of small tournaments, or play some sort of a sit-and-go, or maybe even switch it up to a fun game. Go play a little bit of Raz or something like that where you're really, a different type of thing, or maybe a stud game or something like that. Do you change it that way also, or do you just drop in the buy-ins?
I think that's a great way to do it also. The reason we all play this game is it's a lot of fun. I think when you're grinding hours constantly at the same game, you might forget that, we're playing to make money, but we're also playing to have fun. And, by going in playing a low mix game or playing a different game, you can realize, hey, there's other stuff out there and there's still a lot of fun and it's a game. So anything to get your mind off of your downswing and that you've been running bad, I think is good during that stretch.
Matt Affleck, one of the coaches that you'll find on stack'emcoaching.com. If you want a free trial, go to the site and use the promo code FINALTABLE and check it out on us for free. Matt, always a pleasure. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Right, take
this
care,
is
Matt.
The final This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show. He's Dennis Phillips in Las Vegas. I'm Paul Harris in St. Louis on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. If you want to get our podcast via iTunes, they are free there, or you can get every one of our shows. All 135 of them now are available on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. And our next guest is a guy who won nearly $2 million this summer at the World Series of Poker. He won a bracelet in the $1,500 pot limit hold'em event and then took down the 50K Poker Players Championship, which many people consider the toughest poker tournament in the world. Here is Brian Rast. Hi, Brian. How are you?
Hi. How are you doing?
We're doing great. I'm glad we could finally connect with you. I'm glad you didn't pull an all-nighter like you did a couple of weeks ago, Sam. We couldn't connect with you.
Yeah, I was playing a cash game all night that night, and I didn't quit till about 11 in the morning, and I completely forgot about the show. I probably would have normally stayed up and just done the interview and gone on the show, but I forgot and crashed and went to sleep.
Well, that's okay. We're happy to have you on here today. Let's talk before all the other things in your life about that 50K championship, which led to what I consider a legendary heads-up battle between you and Phil Hellmuth. And at one point he had you, I don't even know, was it 6-1, 9-1? What was the stack ratio there before you made your comeback?
I think there was almost 20 million in chips. And I think I had gotten just under 3, so it was like, I don't know, he had like 17 to 2.5, so whatever that is, it's probably like 7 to 1, 8 to 1, something like that.
At that point, are you playing Phil Hellmuth in a different way than you have played him earlier in the heads-up battle?
You know, not really. Like, basically, I kind of just went in with the idea that, you know, I actually was assuming it was going to be a pretty long battle. I didn't really think that he was going to play like super aggressively. I thought there were going to be a lot of flops. It's hard for me to say that like I changed my strategy. I mean, you know, your strategy changes when you get short. You know, I mean, on the very last hand, I called an all-in with ace king high. You know, if I was a lot deeper, the hand would have played out differently. You know, I mean, I don't know what would have happened. It's possible that he raised me and I ship it and he folds, or possible that he just calls. You know, I don't know, but the truth is that I was so short that the hand, you know, it plays differently for sure.
But were you a little surprised at how he played with the draws that he went after and everything?
I mean, the first one I think is super standard. I think you can make an argument that maybe he should fold pre-flop to my raise. Like, my stack was short enough. 9-6 suited was like a relatively weak hand to call a raise with. I mean, I raised like 200K more or 220K more, and it was about 10% of my stack. So, I mean, while it wasn't a big, you know, it wasn't a big commitment for him chip-wise, like, you know, effective stacks are really only relative to the shortest stack. So, I mean, it was a pretty aggressive call pre-flop with 9-6 suited, I thought. But, you know, I'd probably just only, like, slightly loose. But, I mean, once you see the flop, I think shoving's pretty standard there. And, in fact, because I thought he would shove with all of his flush draws, I mean, I didn't even really think it was – I didn't think about it that much before I called. I actually expected him to have a flush draw most of the time. So, you know, I thought that hand was somewhat standard. Now, the next two hands definitely weren't. I thought out of both of the next two hands, probably the hand that he played – I would say the worst would have been the 10-8 of clubs, just because I think I was deep enough on that hand. I had like over 4 million, like almost 5 million, that he made a really big raise on the flop to the point where he was basically committed to calling it off with 10 high. And I think that he should have either called the flop or made a smaller raise on the flop and then folded. Because I just really don't think that I just don't think that raise calling there is very plus EV. You know, I mean, I'm not folding any king. I didn't fold a king seven. And, you know, I'm not going to fold a bigger flush draw. You know, I might fold a really baby flush draw. I just don't think he's going to be getting in good. And by making such a big raise, he raised like 900K more. He's just he kind of committed himself to the hand. Now the last hand, I actually think, is a little more defensible. I mean, as it turns out, he didn't have any of his open-ended straight outs, but he really did hit the Jack 10-9 flop pretty hard, and I had been leading pretty weak, which is actually part of the reason why I led on that hand instead of checking it, because I kind of wanted him to, like, make a play at me because I had been leading weak. But because I'd been leading weak, you know, and he did hit the flop so hard but still only had eight high, I actually think that all in there is not really that bad. It's like a fine play. So I kind of think the first and third ones were fine, although the third one did kind of look the worst, like, I guess, when you're looking at it in retrospect. And I think probably the second one is the one I would criticize the most.
On that last one, you flopped the king high straight, and Phil had the eight deuce of diamonds for a diamond draw, which he missed, his third straight flush draw that he had missed. The interesting thing to me, Dennis, is listening to Brian talk about this, it's almost the same analysis we got out of Phil, who was very candid about his play when we had him on a couple of weeks ago.
You know, it's so funny. I actually just saw that he was on your show, like, when I was kind of waiting here the last 5 or 10 minutes.
Yep.
And I, like, want to listen to his interview, but I haven't listened to it yet because, I mean, he does talk about the hand, so I was interested in hearing what he had to say about it.
Well, he was very candid with it, I have to admit. People downgrade Phil a little too much sometimes. He can get on people's nerve. He does a few things I may not agree with. But he still is a pretty darn good poker player, and he's willing to take criticism, which a lot of them aren't.
Yeah.
He will actually listen to the other side, may not agree with it, and he'll be very vocal if he doesn't. But, you know, he does take criticism on that. I didn't think that Phil played his normal game there. I almost think he went almost on like a mini tilt, that he'd finished second so many times. He was willing to get it in there any time he thought he had a decent draw, and the heck with it. It just didn't seem like normal Phil. Maybe I'm wrong a little bit, but I think he went on a little bit of a mini tilt there. And just wanted to get it all in there.
I kind of agree with that. Like the 10-8 of clubs, I think the normal Phil would just call with that.
Yes.
But, I mean, I had been giving him some trouble in a bunch of hands throughout the day. And, and I had just doubled up once and then twice through him. And I think he was maybe tilting a little bit. For sure. Although, even that said, I still don't think the third one where he shipped it, I don't really think that's that bad of a play. I mean, I think it's pretty close between maybe shoving there and calling. But, yeah, the second one, I think, is probably the worst with the 10-8.
You know, Brian, watching it on ESPN, there was an interesting dynamic going on there. And I don't know if you knew Phil before this, but I remember distinctly a hand that you were not involved in, but it was a three-way hand where the flop came out ace, queen, seven with two hearts, and Phil led out with top and bottom pair, and Ming Lee called with ace, king. And Matt Glantz shipped it short with the jack 10 of hearts, and Phil, who was the chip leader at that point, folds, and then while Lee is thinking about it, Phil goes over to you and tells you what he had. And I was thinking to myself, do these guys know each other that well that he's sharing this information with another person he's battling with at the final table of the 50K? Did you know each other? I mean, were you surprised at that?
At the time, I wasn't that surprised that he told me, although I do guess, you know, kind of in retrospect, it could definitely seem a little strange. I mean, my read on that situation would be this. I had played with Phil a couple other times. Probably the most was for quite a while on the second to last day of the Bay 101 tournament where he final tabled but got knocked out with his queens to ace jack. I was like to his right, kind of as a short stack, like almost at hold for a long time on like the second to last day when we were playing down to the final table. And other than that, I don't think we played together that much. I guess my guess is probably that more than anything, if I was going to look at it right now and analyze it, I'd say it's kind of a sign of respect. I mean, I don't think Phil would probably talk about a hand or something like that unless he at least thought I was, like, a pretty good player or was interested in kind of sharing that, you know. So, I mean, that's kind of how I would take it. I guess it is a little strange, but, I mean, at the same time, like, I don't know.
Would you ever share that information with him at that point?
I probably would not have shared that information with them. I was sharing some hands with my rail, but I probably wouldn't have shared that information with people at the table. But, you know, actually, and as far as that hand goes, I actually kind of think that that hand is a call for him. I understand some of the thinking about why he folded. And, I mean, I think even after the fact, I've heard, like, Matt Glantz analyze the hand and thought, like, it was a really good fold, even though at the time he didn't. But, like, truthfully speaking, if I remember the hand correctly, Min opened and then Matt just, like, called behind. And I just think, like, I don't remember the opens and the stack sizes perfectly, but that it's like with ace-queen, aces or queens, I think Matt Glantz would have 3-bet Min most of the time there. Because our table wasn't, like, really squeeze-happy. So I wouldn't be expecting that for very many people to be calling too often, hoping that someone's going to squeeze. And I think that when the flop comes ace-queen-7 and then Matt shoves, I think he's going to be showing up with a combo draw, like, especially because the queen wasn't a heart either. A hand like king-10 of hearts, king-jack of hearts, jack-10 of hearts, queen-10 of hearts, you know, all those hands a lot. And like pretty much more than just about anything else. I mean, occasionally I guess he could have a set of sevens, but when Phil has ace-7 in his hand, that makes it a lot harder. So I actually kind of think it's a call there for Phil. Although, you know, it's kind of close, but I mean, he's like a decent favorite against a lot of those hands, you know, and with Min's bet and the money that's already in the pot, you know, and the fact that Matt's like, he was not really short, but kind of short. I think it's close, but I would have called with his hand. But you know, I understand why he laid it down. But
actually, can we move on, because I've read a couple of articles about you and how you've changed in the last couple of years, your life and how you've matured and everything like that. We've talked on the show several times about some of the pitfalls that a 20-something person gets into when he wins a major tournament or goes fourth. I just was very impressed with what is coming out there. Can you just talk a little bit about how your life has changed in the last year and a half?
Yeah, I mean, in January of 2010, I went down to Brazil with Phil Locke, who had been twisting my arm for quite a while to go. I met now my fiance, Juliana, and basically kind of like fell in love. I was only with her there for like 4 days, kind of at the end of our trip. But we've continued the relationship. There's been a lot of difficulties. Like, you know, I tried to get just like tourist visa and then an academic visa for her, and they were both rejected. And you know, I've gone down a number of times, and you know, we finally got a fiance visa now, and just in a little bit she's going to be coming here and we're going to get married here in the U.S. So I mean, in the last year and a half, basically I've kind of went from before that being like a single poker player living in Las Vegas. I was definitely partying a lot, and I'd gotten to a point where, you know, I had kind of like moved up. And I had been playing for a while, like some of the biggest games on the internet. And I kind of got a little burned out with poker, like before I met her. And I'd say that I was definitely slacking. I wasn't really studying the game anymore. I was not playing as often. I was partying a lot. And I think just in general, like my life had kind of, I mean, I was doing fine, but, you know, unwound a little bit. And I'd even say that I was kind of on a little bit of a downswing. Although it was kind of over an extended period of time, you know, and I kind of met Juliana and like just my life kind of changed. And even though I would spend, you know, I've spent like, there'll be 3 weeks where I go without playing poker when I'm down in Brazil, but kind of when I come back, I have a lot more passion, interest in playing. And I've kind of maybe refocused a little bit. I've kind of stopped drinking and partying, and I don't know, like my life has kind of gotten more normal. I'd say I'm probably more happy too. You know, I've also like kind of this didn't really have to do with her, but also coincided with like the same, around the same time that I met her, I made like a commitment to start working out and like trying to take care of myself and eat better. So, I mean, I basically started that like right before I met her, like at the beginning of that year. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. My life's gotten a lot better in the last year and a half. And, you know, I guess this summer didn't hurt either.
Yeah, well, I think Brazil must be good for you. If I have the story right, you flew back from Brazil on the morning of the $1,500 pot limit hold'em event, which you weren't going to play until Antonio Esfandiari said, come on, you got to play this event. And with no sleep after flying up from South America, you went in and not only played in it, but won the bracelet. True story?
True story. I showed up. I was kind of just like hanging out in my apartment, jet lagged. I was just, you know, whatever. I was thinking about maybe taking a nap and playing later that night cash games. But, you know, I didn't really have a plan. I definitely wasn't going to go play the 1500 World Series tournament. But Antonio kind of showed up and like, oh, hey, I just had a lot of energy and wanted to go. And like basically offered to free roll me. And I turned down the first offer and he upped it. And then I basically agreed. I almost got knocked down on day one. I got really short and but doubled up a couple different times, and by the end of the day, I was one of the chip leaders, one of the top 10 or something like that, and I kind of just went from there.
Wow. Well, while we're talking about your international adventures, I got to ask you about another story about playing in Macau, where the story says that you won a hand with $1 million pot in it. Can you tell us? Can you tell us about that and what it's like to play in Macau?
I did not win $1 million pot in Macau. That's definitely not true.
Okay.
Playing in Macau was kind of unique. I mean, like, a lot of the Chinese people there don't speak any English. So, I mean, I went there with a friend of mine, Keith, a couple times, like, 2 years ago. We went, like, before the World Series, and we went again during the World Series. There's, like, kind of a different variety of games. Like, the second time we went during the World Series 2 years ago, it was kind of some of the precursors of what is now, like, the kind of famous, huge game. Some of those same players were starting to play and, like, kind of meet each other. The game was smaller. It was not, like, 10K, 20K Hong Kong or whatever they're playing now. You know, it was, like, 1K, 2K Hong Kong, which is still, like, a pretty good-sized game. I mean, I think that's, you basically divide by 8 or a little less than 8, you know, so still like a pretty decent sized game. And I don't know, it was like pretty crazy. There are definitely some really bad players, and you know, I had some pretty big swings. I had like one session where I won a lot of money, but there was no $1 million pot. So, but yeah, no, it was pretty crazy. But kind of like right after that time when I was there with Keith, actually Phil Locke was there too. Like basically when we left, I think because we had won a pretty decent amount of money, they basically like while we were playing, they kind of instituted this rule that you had to show your hand after you win the pot. Not us, but everyone at the table. And like they were doing it to like maybe learn from us. And they basically decided after that to more or less make the game private. And for a year after like that World Series of Poker when we went, I kept on hearing rumors that like, you know, they weren't letting like white people play with them, and they're kind of entitled to do that because a lot of the guys like own baccarat tables in the Wynn Casino or other casinos, so they were definitely allowed to kind of do whatever they wanted. And they, you know, made the game private. They brought it to another casino. They, you know, they were just kind of doing whatever they wanted to kind of keep the game to themselves. Since for the most part, it's like big time Chinese businessmen or people involved with the casino there.
Sounds like you did fairly well in the Epic Poker League here, the first event that they had when you came back here in the States. What were your first impressions there, and are you going to be playing the next one here in about a week?
My impression of the Epic Poker League is that, for the most part, it seems pretty solid. I mean, it's well run. It's got a good structure. I mean, they're adding money, which is nice. Like, they definitely take care of the players. Like, you get like $100 for the free food. You can get a free room. you know, other perks like that. Like, so for, on the whole, I mean, it's pretty nice. It's pretty well done. I mean, the field's pretty tough because, you know, it's so select. So there's not, like, a ton of value other than the added money, which is definitely worth quite a bit, especially since they only got, like, 150 people or something for the first one. So, I mean, I'm definitely going to play the second one. I mean, my opinion is that it seems like they're spending a lot of money, and I'm not really sure how, as an operation, as this has been brought up by, like, Negrano and other people, it does strike me as, like, kind of a mystery as to how, like, the league's going to be profitable. You know, like, I don't know how they're going to make money. Like, I don't, you know, who's going to sponsor, who's going to pay for the, whatever, the 400K or whatever it is they had in every tournament, plus the $1 million free roll tournament, as the, that's the fifth tournament. I mean, you're talking about a couple million right there. Plus, who knows what they have worked out with the Palms, but all this free stuff they're giving to players.
Right.
So, I mean, it kind of strikes me, like, I'm happy about it. I'm going to play. Like, it's good value. I'm all the added money. I mean, as a long-term sense, you know, I don't know if it's going to be around next year, like, because it's going to make money or not, but I don't really care. I'll just play it this year, and, like, all it's, right. Like, up to the people who own the league to work that out, whatever.
Right. All right, Brian, we're all out of time, but we really appreciate you making time to be on with us today. Congratulations on your big success this year, and good luck to you and Juliana, and we look forward to having you back on again in the future. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, man. It was great to be here. Hope you guys have a good day.
Thank you. That's Brian Rast, who won the 50K Poker Players Championship this summer. Thanks to him and our other guests, Matt Affleck and Chad Holloway. Also, thanks to our sponsors, Harrah's St. Louis and Homestead Financial Mortgage. For great rates, call 800-GRANNY-8. And com. Use the promo code FINALTABLE for a free trial. Dennis, I'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. I'll see you then.
That's the Final Table Poker Radio Show every Tuesday at 3 on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.